Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, September 14th, 2017. Aid workers are evacuated from the former Upper Nile state due to continued fighting there.
Yes, there's insecurity, exactly as you said, in the Upper Nile. We talked about before around Abarach, where there's been clashes there in the last few days, and around about 30 humanitarian workers have been withdrawn from there. They were flown out on Monday.
And dozens of homes are flooded in Bor Town after heavy rains.
This water sneakers, so some other hostile whatever animals in the rivers can sometimes they can come. When the water flows. So it's a bit dangerous sometimes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says 30 aid workers have been evacuated from Abruch in the former Upper Nile state this week because of heavy fighting between government and armed opposition forces. UNMISS says the evacuation will affect thousands of internally displaced persons who depend entirely on relief food to stay alive. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
UNMISS Chief David Sierra says the United Nations is concerned about humanitarian conditions for the thousands of families trapped in the latest violence in Abruch.
Yes, there's insecurity, exactly as you said, in the Upper Nile. We talked about before around Abarach, where there's been clashes there in the last few days, and around about 30 aid workers have been, humanitarian workers have been withdrawn from there. They were flown out on Monday.
Aid agencies say there are around 20,000 internally displaced persons or IDPs in Abruch. Sierra says they lack shelter, food, water, and medicine. He says nearly all of the IDPs depend on humanitarian aid for their survival. President Salva Kiir declared a cessation of hostilities in South Sudan in May this year, but seems not working. Sierra says clashes between government and opposition forces continue in the Upper Nile and some areas of the Equatorial region.
Down in the Equatorias, we are still seeing ongoing fighting. Unfortunately, most often that affects civilians. The ICRC driver that was killed a few days ago was another tragedy. So that is a real concern to us. Where there's violence, there's displacement. Where there's displacement, people require humanitarian assistance because they get separated from their animals, their crops, all the things that they need in order to be able to survive by themselves.
The fighting in Upper Nile, Jonglei, and insecurity in the Equatorial regions have affected hundreds of thousands of vulnerable South Sudanese, according to the head of UNMISS. Overall, Sierra says the instability has affected some 4 million people, with 2 million internally displaced in the country and another 2 million who have fled to neighboring countries. Overall, Sierra says the instability has affected some 4 million people, with 2 million internally displaced in the country and another 2 million who have fled to neighboring countries. He says latest records indicate that 7.6 million South Sudanese are in desperate need of food, health care, and education. Sierra says the United Nations has only secured 66% of the funds needed for this year for its work in South Sudan, and another $1.64 billion is needed. He says the crisis in South Sudan will feature prominently in the 72nd session of the United Nations General Assembly, which gets underway next week in New York.
I'm sure that the event in New York will also highlight the importance of ending impunity for attacks against civilians and humanitarian workers.
The top UN diplomat expressed concern over the apparent failure by South Sudanese authorities to provide security for humanitarian organizations operating in South Sudan. He says the killing of a driver working for the International Committee of the Red Cross last week brings the total number of 8 workers killed in South Sudan so far this year to 18.
I'm expecting, and we hope for, a solidarity of purpose between the UN, the AU, the African Union and IGAD, for those organisations to agree a stated commitment to reach a political settlement and support the revitalisation of the peace process. And I anticipate that discussions will centre on plans for the upcoming IGAD-led high-level revitalisation forum.
Sierra says UNMISS is expecting more regional protection forces to be dispatched to South Sudan from Ethiopia and Rwanda next month. Last month, 650 peacekeepers from Nepal, Bangladesh and Rwanda arrived in Juba with a mandate to protect civilians, humanitarian aid workers and other installations. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Getting more aid to those who need it most in South Sudan and to those who fled to other countries continues to be a problem. The United Nations said last month the number of refugees from South Sudan surpassed the 2 million mark and called on the international community to help fund aid agencies working to save lives. Dipmala Mala, Mercy Corps' country director for South Sudan, says donors should not only commit to funding the humanitarian response in South Sudan, but should do it in a sustainable way so that people can help themselves.
Every time we have new numbers for displaced people, for refugees out of South Sudan, for people who do not have enough food to eat, it always deteriorates. And unfortunately, this is not something which is new or like an earthquake which hits us the previous night. Every year, we make a projection that next year is going to be worse. So I have to say all this has happened while the world was watching.
What is life like for the average South Sudanese civilian?
On the run, not knowing where their next meal is coming from, being uprooted. And the resilience of the people is phenomenal, but just being on the run, leaving behind what all they have, being uprooted. And, you know, when you talk about refugees or people displaced, we are talking about people who have been displaced multiple times in their lives. So these 2 million people, now we have hit the 2 million mark. These 2 million people, most likely, most of them have been displaced more than once at least.
Dipmala, there are a lot of calls for monetarily upping the humanitarian response, but you argue that aid agencies should go beyond that and help people do more than just survive.
Because my point is we have to totally fund the humanitarian response in South Sudan, not only in terms of quantity, but also quality. The funding should be able to help people not only to survive for today, but also rebuild their lives. For example, giving them food to eat today or soap to protect themselves from cholera today. Along with this, we need to make some investment in them so that they can rebuild their lives. For example, help them farm, help revive the local market, take kids back to school, so that we get out of this circle of continuous humanitarian assistance and give this newest nation in the world a chance to thrive.
What are some of the items that are most needed among refugees?
For displaced people, as of now, the most needed items include food, because this is the rainy season and malaria is prevalent, mosquito nets, blankets, soap, especially when we have such high incidence of cholera, textbooks, you name it. But, you know, in addition to these emergency items, if we can provide people seeds for growing crops, seeds for growing vegetables and fishing kits, that would really give them a safety net along with that immediate helping hand. I want to say that until the guns fall silent, the situation is only going to deteriorate. And I have heard it for a couple of recent years now that South Sudan is on the brink. The world has to realize the brink is over, over and beyond. We have to wake up and say enough is enough. And right now, we are right here, right now, ready to help this newest nation.
That was Dipmala Mala, Mercy Corps South Sudan Country Director, speaking to me earlier today from Juba. An overflowing River Nile and heavy rains have flooded Bor Town and displaced hundreds of families. Residents are pleading for help from state and national governments so they can build temporary shelters. Dengai Deng has the details for VOA from Bor.
Martha Aluela Kwe, a resident of Legiak Safhab in Bor Town, digs up a muddy ground to set up a dike around her house. She has four grass-thatched structures, including her home. Speaking in Dinka, Akwe says three of the four have been swept away by the flood. Akwe says she worries about her children, adding anything could hurt them in the flood area. She says the wind and rain have demolished her three structures yesterday. She says two of her neighbor's children are living with her in her small tukul because the house has been flooded. She says it is really very difficult. Martha and many other residents like her are asking government officials to provide help, such as plastic sheets for sheltering materials. Another resident of the Haifa and Jaffa suburb, 30-year-old Anger Majer, says in Dinka that her house was flooded, so she and her three children are taking refuge in her neighbor's house. She says it is very bad. Her entire house is flooded. She says she struggles now to see if she can get hold of plastic sheets so she can set up a tukul for herself and her children. Luet Alier, a resident of Block 2 Safhav, says he too does not feel safe walking to work each morning through the flooded areas.
Because this water has mixed up, so some other hostile whatever animals in the rivers can sometimes they can come when the water flow. So they are very dangerous sometimes. Those animals like crocodiles and some other animals there in the water. So it's very dangerous sometimes.
Lueth is calling on the government to set up a drainage system across Bo Town. Machar Macholdeng, Deputy Mayor for Administrations and Finance in Bo Municipality, says his major concern is flooded households.
Over 1,500 from Legyak and Pandyak. Also, if you go to the side of Shengdir, also there's about 1,200 number of the household. So there's heavy flooding here in Bo Town. So, and the rest of the blocks, which I did not mention.
Machol says Bo authorities are trying to open drainages but failed to complete the work because they do not have enough money to carry out the work.
The government, the whole government is in financial constraint right now at the moment. So the little fuel that we have utilized it. So, and we don't have another fuel. We have bulldozer here, and this bulldozer can help us to open the drainages.
Michael is asking NGOs to intervene in helping town residents overwhelmed by the flooding in and around Bor. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng reporting from Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Planting trees in South Sudan to help save the environment. Find out where when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is a bad habit you are working on overcoming?
Time mismanagement. Because whatever you are to do, you have to manage your time well. So that is the bad habit I want to manage.
A bad habit? I'm not seeing any habits I've been practicing. No.
I don't have many friends, and I think I want to overcome that. I want to have friends.
I sleep too much during the day. Sometimes I sleep at my workplace and I know it's bad. So I'm trying to change that by going to bed early at night.
I like sending people younger than me on errands. So right now I'm working on trying to do things myself so that I'll not be seen as incapable or worrying people too much. So that's what I'm really working on.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. School children in an orphanage school in Torit are planting hundreds of trees to avert the effect of climate change caused by deforestation. An agronomist in Torit says while the effort alone is not enough to counterbalance the downing of thousands of trees, it will help the children grow up more conscious about the importance of taking care of their environment. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
School children in a Torit orphanage sing about their appreciation for trees in South Sudan. The Hope for South Sudan Academy in Moti Village was established in 2008 for orphans. The school is located 5 kilometers outside Torit town. The pupils sing about the importance of tree to the community. The 300 or so children enrolled in the orphanage school range in age from 5 to 17. Many of the children here lost their mothers during childbirth and were brought as infants from hospitals and village homes to the orphanage. The children attend classes in the school and given small plots of land where they can practice how to plant and take care of trees and vegetables. The orphanage school began operations in 2008 and the children have planted about 1,700 trees, including mangoes and mahogany, teak, lemons, guavas, among a variety of plants. A 13-year-old girl who we will identify only as Susan is in a primary 5. Susan says they are planting trees to help make their environment safe.
Because the environment looks very green and very colored and full. And if I see the very green place, I say I'm very happy to see a very green place.
Susan says their teachers teach them about how to keep the environment clean and grow vegetables. She says that is why in her small plot, she decided to also plant tomatoes.
She started putting them on nursery beds. Then if you put them on the nursery beds, if they grow, then you take them and you transplant them to another place. And if you transplant them, if they grow, you can put some sticks to support them.
Another student at the school we will identify as Nakai is in primary 5. Nakai says she cannot remember how and when her mother died. She says she has many goals to accomplish. Nakai planted about 15 guava trees that have started producing fruits.
I love guava because it is very sweet. When I grow big, I will be a pilot. I can also plant things around my home. I can also do many things.
Teachers train the orphans how to protect the environment also for their own food security. Teacher Solomon Lokang says he enjoys mentoring the children on tree planting.
We put them together when we are preparing the place for planting trees or putting them in the nursery bed, that we can take them together to see how we are trying to prepare the trees and the nursery bed.
Lokang says the children are fast learners and have planted many trees in an area once devastated by villagers who cut down mature trees for charcoal, which is in high demand in Torit market. Philip Origo is an agronomist and a pastor at the South Sudan Hope Orphanage Academy. Origo says the illegal cutting of trees is a major problem around Torit town.
And we used to tell our children that, look, when there is a missing tree, you know, we have something missing also in our environment. Because a tree, you know, can bring us rain. And then the soil will be protected. The burning grass will be minimized. So we have to encourage people who are making charcoal to get a way of, you know, minimizing this cutting of forest. Because it is going to bring us desert.
Origo says about 750 mango trees, 600 oranges trees, and 300 guava trees, which the children have planted, will provide food to eat for the community.
Food is coming from outside. And then we thought of that, why not produce our own food here? And then we train our children how they can cope up with any environment if there are some problems. They can produce their own food here at least to minimize the expenses which is coming from outside.
Earlier this year, community leaders and youth from Torit town apprehended individuals who were cutting down trees for charcoal. Repeated attempts by state authorities to discourage residents from cutting down trees have been largely ineffective because most Torit town residents rely on charcoal as their only source of energy for cooking. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A senior four student in Yeytown is using her talents to stay in school. Kamisa Susan makes body lotions and sells them to raise money for tuition fees and other family needs. Since the outbreak of fighting in South Sudan in late 2013, Yei River State residents like Susan have had a tough time finding ways to earn money. Daniel Friday Martin has this report for VOA from Yeytown.
22-year-old Kamisa Susan says she makes her body lotion from scratch.
I get the shop, flowers, oil, and small water. I put in saucepan and I put into the fire to boil. After they boil, then I carry it down and I pour them into the containers and I put in cold place. Then it will dry from there. Then after drying, then I will take them to the market.
Susan says she dedicates her evening hours and weekends to running her business. She sells her products to various shop owners in town and customers she meets on the street. Susan says she makes between 1,000 and 2,000 South Sudanese pounds a day.
I show people who are gathered in one place, I will come and explain to them, I have this, this, this. Then they will see. Then when they see it, it is very nice and they will buy it. I have for 100, I have for 150, I have for 300, I have for 500, just according to the containers. I'm using this money to pay my school fees, and some I used to pay with my brothers in school also.
Susan says lack of capital, transportation and skyrocketing inflation are big obstacles to keeping her business afloat. She's calling on state officials and development partners to promote entrepreneurship in schools and establish more business training centers to equip students like her with technical skills. But most of all, Susan says she wants to see peace in her country.
Without fees, this business will not go. If fees is there, we can make the business and take to outside, like rural areas, even to some towns, and this business will expand.
Charity Mimi buys Kemsa's product. Charity says she is motivated by Kemsa's skills, which support other women in the business sector.
What interests us is the price. Apart from the prizes, this is a young entrepreneur. We just feel we should support her. I really ask the government to support such projects, even financially or morally.
Aloma Baba, another of Kemsa Susan's customers, encourages young entrepreneurs to be innovative.
I bought this lotion from her. It is really very enjoyable. And the perfume is well produced. The young ladies also should copy what Kemsa is doing. Because if a lady study very well, it will bring development in our new state.
Henry Kala is the Commissioner for Trade and Investment Authority in Yei River State. Kala says the state is trying to restore peace and create a favorable environment for local and international investors. But insecurity and South Sudan's economic crisis has hindered investment opportunities.
This is where we want to enter in and support them, to boost their talents so that they can do a better job. I'm sure if we are in peace, such kind of people, our government can even boost their technology so that they can produce enough. But due to this war, things are not moving in the right direction.
Yei River State is a strategic commercial town bordering the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda. Before the outbreak of violence in South Sudan, Yei Town was busy with traders from DRC, Uganda and Kenya importing goods to the residents of the town. That has since changed after fighting between government forces and rebels forced a majority of residents in the town to take refuge in Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Uganda's ruling party says it will introduce a motion in parliament to scrap the presidential age limit in the constitution. The move would allow longtime President Yoweri Museveni to run in the next elections. But the motion is already sparking resistance, even from some in the president's own party. Halima Athmani has the story for VOA from Kampala.
The speculation is finally over in Uganda. Members of the ruling National Resistance Movement Party said Thursday that in a week's time they will introduce a motion in parliament to abolish the presidential age limit. Ruling party MP James Kakoza says the age limit is discriminatory.
Because you cannot say people will be the final verdict to choose the people they want in elective politics, and you discriminate them because of their age that they are old.
But opponents say the proposed amendment is a ploy to keep President Yoweri Museveni in office. Museveni has already been in power for more than three decades. Uganda's constitution sets the presidential age limit at 75 years. Museveni would be 76 years old when the next election rolls around in 2021. Musician Bobby Wine was recently elected to parliament as an independent. He came out against the proposal Thursday, saying Museveni's government is responsible for widespread poverty, unemployment and violence at the hands of the state.
We only have this one chance. We must make the pledge that we shall not allow this amendment to pass. My brothers and sisters, we must defend the Constitution before it is too weak to defend us.
There is also opposition within the NRM. VOA spoke to ruling party member Barnabas Tinkasimire.
This country belongs to all of us. His time is over. 35 years for God's sake. You can't and is raised up. Let us not be taken for granted.
President Museveni has not said publicly whether he supports eliminating the age limit. When asked about the issue by reporters at the State House Wednesday, the president said it is up to parliament.
So for us, our work was finished. The rest is now for you, the young people, and for the MPs and other leaders to discuss the interests of Uganda and the interests of Africa.
However, Museveni also urged anyone who doubts his fitness to lead the country past age 75 to speak to his doctors. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song La Suba by Victoria Olé. You've been listening to Victoria Olay with the song La Suba. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We're glad you could be here. We'd like to hear how you feel about the show. You can drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.